course, you'll be coloring. You won't be filling in the outline, but you can sort of follow along anyway. Does anyone need an outline? Marie has them. She's back there. Just raise your hand. She'll get you one. And I'll just do a little introduction. When we were in Europe, my son and I just got back from 3 weeks in Europe. While we were there, we noticed that a lot of the towns and villages and even the big cities, the older cities, it was interesting that the people, whenever they put these towns and villages together, you know, hundreds of years ago, what they would do is find the highest hill in the village, and on the highest hill, they would build the church. And on the church would be a steeple, and on top of the steeple would be the cross. As if the people building these villages and towns were trying to say, God is what's really important, or God is up there, or maybe it was, you know, no matter what trouble you get into, anywhere in the city, no matter where you are, all you have to do is look up to the source of the hope that you have. So the church is very prominent. Now in our country, I think you can go to some little towns and you'll see a little bit of that. But in our cities, we tended to just build the skyscrapers right next to the church. So downtown Grand Rapids, we have some fairly big churches, right? But what's right next to them? You know, they have these huge buildings, or one, I forget, is it St. Mary's or something? It's the freeway towers above of the church. And so there's this, you know, well, we just don't see it as much. So we notice that there's a bit of a difference in the church thing here in the United States and in Europe. One of the differences is there's more nominalism in Europe. Nominalism is a name that people use to describe people that are Christians in name only. They're nominal. So, for example, in Germany, 85% of the population pays the church tax. There's a government tax, just like we have, but there's also a church tax. And you can get out of paying the church tax if you want, but 85% of Germans pay the church tax. 5% of Germans actually go to church. But they pay the church tax. They get baptized, they get married there, they have their funerals there, but that's about it. So there's this in name only kind of thing. About 10 years ago, a friend of mine and I went to a conference in Europe. It was on nominalism, and it was about 80 pastors, a couple of priests, from all over Europe, and Henry and I, my friend, we were the token Americans, and we were talking about nominalism. It was a fascinating thing because we were a small group. We got to know many of these fellows, especially a couple guys from Ireland, and one was from Sweden, and one was from Finland. And we ended up talking to them about church and how church goes and the differences. One guy from Ireland, we got to know him. We had a lot of fun with these guys. He was describing his situation. He was in a big church. But in Europe, there tends to be the parish system. In other words, the church is here, and if you draw a big circle around the church, these 3,000 people ought to go to this church. And he said that's the church that they're in. It covers like 3,000 people, but 85 people actually go. So most of the 3,000 don't go. And he said, well, our pastor, he's kind of old and doesn't like change and so on. And so we, you know, a couple bold Americans, you know, that's not the American way. If something doesn't work, you should change it. So we were talking about church planting and so on and so forth, and we suggested to this young guy, why don't you just daughter a church? In fact, you could start it right across the street. You'd probably have 85 people the first year. You'd double the people that are being reached. And I remember this Irish pastor, and he was in the Presbyterian church, you know, not unlike the Christian Reformed denomination. He kind of chuckled at us. He said, oh, you Americans, you know, you think everything can be done with a six-shooter. You know, cowboys come in and just making things happen. But this is what he said. I mean, that was the attitude that he had. But he said to us, oh, yeah, you have the free church. You are part of the free church. I didn't know exactly what do you mean, the free church. In Europe, most of the churches are like what I described. They're parish. Some of them are tied to the government. Some of them aren't. But it's more of a, this is the church for this area, and this is the church you ought to go to. But there are some churches in Europe that are called, a part of this movement called the Free Church. And the way he said it in a way that was like, oh yeah, you're a part of the free church. He said it like it's a bad thing. And we were like, well, yeah, of course. The free church. That's what it's, freedom, you know? In fact, this is the way all of our churches are in the United States. All the churches are part of the free movement. And so we talked and we tried to talk them out of things. And we said, you know, the way you're doing it now, 2,925 or 35 people aren't able or aren't coming to church. Is that good? And then he was Presbyterian, so he had the, you know, believed in providence. So he just turned back and said, you know what? God can make anything happen. If God wants to reach our people, he will. And he'll do it through his church. And we just kind of said, okay. And then off we went. Over the last 10 years, you know, I've been sort of challenged in that free-willing thinking. I think part of it came from when I was in seminary. You know, when I was in seminary, this was the end of the late 70s, and a lot of us in seminary were still reeling from the 60s. There was still that 60s mentality which said, you know what, things should be free. You should be able to do what you want to do. The piece of paper that says you're married isn't the thing that makes you married. It's just a piece of paper. It's not your membership in something that makes something. It's what you do within that. So we talked about church membership way back when I was in seminary. And we made arguments like this. Did Jesus ever join a church? Did Jesus ever join the church? So maybe we don't need to have church membership. Maybe these are just words that we use. I mean, what does it mean anyway? Someone joins, but what does it mean? They can do nothing. And then you got someone else who's doing a lot and he didn't join. So isn't membership into something really dependent on what you actually do? So anyway, we had these kind of 60s notion. That's real. What's really important is the thing that you do, not the label, not the ceremony that you walk through. And so I still had a lot of that attitude, and I probably still do. There's still part of me that says, you know, it doesn't really matter. You join a church, you don't join a church. Do you know Jesus as your Lord and Savior? Are you committed to his people? You know? And what do you do about it? That's what makes the difference. So I know that some of you will come to this church for 30 years and you'll never join. And part of me is like, with that 60s mentality, like, yeah, well, whatever. Whatever. What's important is what you do with what it is that you believe. But I would have to say that over the last 25, 30 years, that I've swung a little bit more towards my brethren, my Christian fellow walkers with God, over there in Europe. Because there's, you know, what they were really saying is, you know, you have this free church system, but you have the problems that come from that. The problems of people tending to go to church because of what the church can do for you. You know, if you can join this church, why join this church? Because next year I might not like this church and I'll just go to a different one. So why even bother joining? It's kind of the kind of view of marriage is the same thing. Why get married? I mean, maybe it won't work out. So, you know, and then I'll have to break out of it and get out of it. Why don't we just see how it goes for this year in the first place? And that's the way it is with a lot of things. People are sort of, at least in our country, very consumer oriented. You know, what's in it for me? And I will be a part of something as long as these things go for me, meet my needs. And the minute they don't meet my needs, I'll go somewhere else. And so we get this, you know, consumer mentality. Our question this morning is, if you look on your outline, in between your coloring, why join a church? And what we're going to do this summer is we're going to be looking at some of the things that we have in our pastor's class. There's a new members class. New members take this class. Jim and I kind of figured that out a couple years ago, and people that have joined our church go through this 5-week class, and so some of you will know some of this. It'll be a little different than that. And Jim and I have been talking with the consistory, talking about, well, how can we get everyone to go through this class? And we've invited you many times, and you don't come. So sometimes you can't get the horse to the water, so sometimes you have to bring the water to the horse. So that's what we're going to do this summer. We're going to go through some of these things. Next week it's, of course, Father's Day. But to start out with, why join a church? And I have some consumer kinds of things that I want to share with you. There's some benefits. We're going to look at some benefits. We're going to look at some responsibilities. And there's the process. And then there's even something called the exit strategy. So on your outline, benefits, just five of them. It's not an exhaustive list. There's others too. Hopefully this is a broad umbrella. Number one, why join a church? Encouragement. Encouragement. Hebrews 10:25, let us not give up meeting together as some are in the habit of doing, but let us encourage one another, and all the more as you see the day approaching. Encouragement. Just being together is encouraging, isn't it? I mean, just as we come together, it's an encouraging thing. You know, one of the discouraging things about summer is so many of you are gone. Sometimes we get here and there's like four people. And it's fine. You know, we're off on vacation. We're doing our thing. It's not a problem. But it feels that way. It's really cool when we have a holiday or some kind of a day where everyone's here. Isn't it kind of neat? Because then the singing, you know, it's bigger, it's better. It's because there's an encouragement that we get from one another. Some of you have said, you know, when you go off on vacation and you're gone from Pathway for a couple of weeks and you come back, you say, you know, it's so cool to come back because I kind of missed being together with all these friendly faces and singing and doing our thing together. You know, to have Homer back is kind of cool for a Sunday. It's like a part of your family that was gone and then he's here again. It feels good. You watch little kids. And that need for encouragement. I mean, a three-year-old, he sits on the floor and he builds this tower of blocks. You know, kids like to, maybe it's boys, I don't know. They build this tower of blocks and it gets so high. And then what do? They knock it down. But before they knock it down, they look at you. They look at mom, they look at dad, and they look and they want you to see this tower of blocks that they just built. And they're looking into your eyes. This is a pretty good tower, dad. Pretty good tower, mom. I mean, look how high it is. And what do they want from you? Yeah, that's a really, wow, you're a good tower builder. And then they knock it down. But, you know, we don't know who we are without someone saying. I mean, how do I know if I'm doing anything good at all? I mean, this is why we have school systems. Hey, you're doing pretty good. Hey, you're pretty good at that. Kid goes out for sports and he does something and the crowd claps. I mean, what is all of that is just saying, you know what, this is pretty good. You have some gifts in this particular area. Without people letting you know that, you don't know that. So a lot of us, we have gifts and abilities, but we're kind of shy about them. Why? Even coloring. Oh, I can't color. Why? Because no one ever said that, hey, you do that okay. You're not bad at that. Some researchers, I don't know how they figure this out, but I've read a few different studies that say if you want to get a balanced person, you need to encourage them five times for every criticism. So if you're going to criticize someone, you have to first encourage them five times. Why? Because if you don't have that balance, all they'll hear is the criticism. They won't hear the encouragement that you say to them, because the criticism is more powerful and will eat up the encouragement. So if you want a balance, you need five encouragements for every criticism. Well, that's what the church should be, isn't it? That's what the church is. You join a group of people, a group of people that understand the grace of God and the forgiveness of God. The place where people can fail and start all over. You failed? Yeah. Well, we all fail. We're all sinners. But God's grace is good, and you can try again. A place of encouragement. It's one of the things I pray for, that I could be a better encouraging leader. Because it's not natural for me. It doesn't come natural for me. And what's so hard about it? It's not really hard. You know, during the singing, I see some of you singing. I see some of your parents just with a smile on your face, and you're singing away. Then I look at your kids, and they're kind of following you. And after church, it would be so easy for me to just say, hey, you know what? I see you singing away there, and then I watch you. It's just a great thing that you're doing. Keep it up. Small little thing. Would that be so hard? I notice it. I see it. And then I forget about it. And I don't say it. Church is a place of encouragement. Number two, it's not just a place of encouragement. It's a place of challenge. When you join a church, it's a place of challenge. Hebrews 10:24, and let us consider how we may spur one another on toward love and good deeds. What's the spur? Where do we have spurs? What's that for? Yeah, you put them on the back. I don't. Do horse people still do that? Do they? Yeah. Okay. So, and why would that be? You know, our family owned horses for about 5 years. Horses are incredible things. They're incredibly smart. And if you don't train a horse well, the horse will own you. Horses, they have a sense of thing. You know, when you put the saddle on a horse, and then you want to cinch up the thing, you know what the horses do? They expand their belly. They take a big breath. And then you tighten it up. You think, oh, that's pretty tight. And then you get on the saddle, and what do? They suck in their breath, and now the saddle's loose, and they shake you right off. And if you don't have a well-trained horse, you're riding along, and they go right next to a tree. And they know exactly how close they are to the tree, and they know where your leg is, and they know where they are, and they make sure you hit the tree. They're very, very clever. We had a couple of horses, and we'd take them out, and we'd ride. You know, we had this quarter-mile track on our property where they used to ride sulkies around. And we would take our horses there, and we'd race them around this track. But we weren't very good horse people. We didn't ride them enough. We didn't train them enough. And when we would go riding, when the track went away from the barn, they were kind of reluctant. They kind of loped along. And then when we turned the corner and on the track where it's heading back to the barn, they would gallop like crazy. And then the problem was the turn. The turn where you want to keep going down the track away from the barn. It was like they wanted to go. Where do they want to go? They want to go back to the barn. Horses want to go back to the barn. And, you know, we're like that too. We want to go back to the barn. We want to sit in the barn. We want to sit on the couch. We want to watch television. We don't want to get out there. We don't want to be challenged. Our tendency is to want to go back to the barn. So a horse every now and again needs his spur, needs a kick. No, we're going to stay on the track. We're going to do this. And we need that too. And we need to be that with each other. Because often we want to go back to the barn. So a church, joining a church is a part of the whole challenge thing. Number three, accountability. Romans 12, verse 5. We are all parts of His one body, and each of us has different work to do. And since we are all one body in Christ, we belong to each other, and each of us needs all the others. That's what a body does, really. A body holds you accountable. A peer group at school holds that group of people into something, into some kind of culture. It's really accountability. Now, most people don't want more accountability in their life. Oh, I would like to join a group of people that will hold me accountable. Most of us don't want that. Most of us, maybe we need it, but it's not what we want. Do I want to join this group that's trying to lose weight? And every week they're going to put me on the scale? You know, my son and I went to Europe for 3 weeks, and when I came back, I stepped on the scale. I lost 15 pounds. I was trying to lose 15 pounds the 6 months before that and didn't really do very good. I went away for 3 weeks, lost 15 pounds, stepped on. It was great. That was a week ago. I stepped on the scale. I haven't stepped on it since. You know why? Because, you know, when I got back, you know, on that trip, you know, we were eating granola by the hand, you know, and, you know, an apple here and there, you know, because to eat out, we ate out 2 times in Europe. It's like $60 to eat out. So we didn't do that. So we didn't eat a lot. So when I got back here, boy, the food looked pretty good. And the first Sunday, what did we have? We had a potluck. And we had it with First Reform. And what are you going to do? They brought all that food. You got to eat it. You got to be kind and considerable and hospitable to these people. So I did my best to make them feel welcome. And then every week, you know, my parents call. You know, they haven't seen us, so they want to take us out to eat. Well, I had never had the ribs at Russ's. So, you know, someone has to try them out. And then yesterday was Daniel Morris's graduation, and they had all this taco stuff that looked pretty, and this melted cheese. It was like a big bowl of it. And, you know, where's it all going to go? Someone has to eat that. So I did my best again. You know, it's... You know, now why am I afraid to step onto that scale? Whether I step onto that scale or I don't step on the scale, is it going to make a bit of difference in terms of how I weigh? Stepping on the scale will not add a single pound to me. What will it do? It just tells you the truth. That's all it does. That's what accountability is. Accountability doesn't do things to you. It just tells you the truth. And the truth will what? Set you free. Yeah. It's like bowling. You know, you start out bowling, you throw the ball down there, and the little thing on the above the bowling thing, it tells you how many pins you knocked down. That all it does is tell you the truth. Yeah, you hit three of them. You got seven more to go. It just tells you the truth. It's not its fault. Now, let's say you don't like the truth. Oh, that's painful. I don't want to see the truth. So we take that away. We don't let you see the pins. We don't let you hear the pins, and you just start throwing the ball down. Yeah, after a while you quit because you have no idea. Well, what's this game about? It's not going anywhere. The game is, how many did I hit down? Well, what do I got to do? Maybe I got to move over a little bit. Maybe I got to adjust something. So the truth, the accountability, just tells you the truth and helps you to grow in any endeavor. Now, we have this all over in our life. The hard thing is to do accountability in the church. You know why? Because here's what happens. You go bowling with your brother. You throw the ball down and you keep hitting three. And he throws the ball down and he gets eight, nine, and a few strikes every now and again. So your brother is better than you are. And see, we're keeping track, and one is better than the other, and we don't like that. That doesn't feel good. That's not fair. We want everything the same. And so we somehow adjust the game so that everyone turns out the same. But then no one learns and grows anything. See, that's in church. It's sometimes hard to do that. It's hard to do that because some are going to be good and some are not. Some are going to be quick, some are not going to be quick. Some have this gift, some have that gift. But that's the body, isn't it? That's the body. We do have different gifts. We have different speeds. We're not all good at the same things. We're not all good in the same way. We're a diverse body. But we're all people that want to grow. So the trick is, well, how do you do that? How do you put accountability within a church without hurting people for the purpose of helping people? So that's what we're trying to do as a church. We have a, you know, memory, verse memory. You know, we recite those verses. What's the accountability? The accountability is reciting them, but you could cheat, right? You could just read the words. So we don't have strong accountability, and because we don't have strong accountability, many of you don't know these verses. Well, that's too bad. Maybe we should figure out better accountability so that we can succeed. Well, that's what the church is. It's trying to always figure that out. Number four, benefits. Discover your gifts. Romans 12, verse 6. God has given each of us the ability to do certain things well. And you discover your gifts in a community that allows you to try things, a community that allows you to try things and fail, because gifts are not always obvious. Gifts are not always given right away. The sad thing is that a lot of 10-year-olds, some of you are 10 years old, you think you are who you are already. I'm not very smart. I'm not very bright. I'm not very quick. I'm not very good with words. I'm not very good with art. I'm not very good. When you have no idea what you're good at 10 years old. Who knows what gift God is yet going to give you? But you have no idea who you are at 20. You have no idea who you are at 30 or 40 or 60. The colonel, Kentucky Fried Colonel guy, he didn't do Kentucky Fried until he was over 70. That's when he finally figured out who he was. He's the colonel. Discovering your gifts. Number five, fifth benefit, purpose. We have a purpose. Matthew 28, we talked about it a couple weeks ago. To make disciples, to be a disciple and to make disciples. Okay, benefits, responsibilities. Things that we are supposed to do. The truth is, everyone wants responsibility. We like responsibility. When we have responsibility, it seems like our lives have purpose and meaning. You look at a child, he wants responsibility. He wants to mow the lawn. Until he figures out that it's work. He wants to take ownership for things. You know, when a kid is learning how to dress himself, what do they finally say when you start dressing them? We do, or I do. I will dress myself. I want responsibility because I am somebody. Now, we want responsibility. That's our inherent condition. But what happens as you get older and you start taking on responsibility, what is it that sort of blunts that desire? If you take on responsibility, what happens? People have more expectations of you. Oh, you took that responsibility? Now we're going to see what you did with it. And what happens when you take responsibility? You will sometimes what? Fail. I take on this responsibility, and then I fail, and then people are on my case. Someone is offering more responsibility to me. What should I do? No, thank you. No, thank you. I'll let someone else do it. You know? So as we move toward adulthood, we eventually learn, hold it here. Responsibility is a great thing. Makes you feel good. Makes you feel like you're somebody. But on the negative side is, if I take on responsibility and I fail, then I'll have that kick me sign on my back. Well, how can we be? A church should be the place that we want people taking on responsibility, but they will fail. And how do you deal with it? So we have responsibilities when you join a church. What are they? Number one, desire to live a Jesus culture. Desire to live a Jesus culture. The church is not just a place where we believe certain things. It's a whole way of life. In fact, when Jesus came and he got the disciples discipling people and they started doing that in cities all across Asia Minor, the non-Christians looked at the Christians and they didn't call them Christians. They called them people of the way. These are people of the way. Because at that time in the first century, religion was sort of a convenient thing. There were a lot of different religions. There was the cult of the emperor. There was the religion of the city. There was the religion of the area. There were religions geared for the business that you're in. There were all these different religions, and people sort of believed them all. Why not? You know, I'm in this business. I might as well believe this too. It was sort of in name only. It was the first century nominalism. You're a whatever it is in name only. But these Christians, who could have been just in name only, they weren't like that. They were different. They were people that not only believed certain things about God, but they were people who believed certain things about the way you live, how you do marriage, how you do your family, how you treat a neighbor, how you practice hospitality, how you treat the widow and the orphan. And people notice that this is a lifestyle. So joining a church is not just believing certain things. It's joining a whole way of life, a biblical lifestyle. One of our key verses here at Pathway is Deuteronomy 6 through 9. Let's see if we can say it together. These commandments... Tie them as symbols on your hands, bind them to your foreheads, write them on the door frames of your houses and on your gates. That verse we didn't memorize. But these are all cultural things. They're patterns in your life that you're trying to put together. And so as a church, we try to work on that together, these patterns, Bible reading and prayer and music. In fact, it's interesting reading John Calvin. I mentioned him last week. He's the one that came up with this whole idea of family visiting, where elders and deacons and the pastor come and visit each family. And you know what the purpose was? The purpose of family visiting was that the elders and the deacons and the minister would go to each family and ask, how is the family worship going on in your home? There's all this literature about this. This is what they went around and did that. Okay, so we come to your house. You're the head of the household. How's it going? How's the Bible reading going? How's the discipling going? How's the singing going? They were supposed to worship. It was a daily thing that the people were supposed to do. A way of life. Number two, responsibilities. Use your gifts. 1 Corinthians 12, verse 7. The spiritual gift is given to each of us as a means of helping the entire church. So we all have a gift. What might it be? And we use it to benefit those around us. And since we all have different gifts, all the different slots and all the different needs ought to be taken care of because we have different gifts. Well, joining a group, you're throwing in your gifts into the hat, into the ring. Number three, giving. This is the verse that Jim had us read, 2 Corinthians 9. Remember this: whoever sows sparingly will also reap sparingly. Whoever sows generously will also reap generously. Each man should give what he has decided in his heart to give, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. And God is able to make all grace abound to you, so that in all things, at all times, having all that you need, you will abound in every good work. It's really talking about two things here. A, time. B, money. Talking about your time and your money. Giving your time and giving your money. Someone once said, if you tell me what you do with your time and your money, I will tell you what you're living for. You can say what you're living for. You can say what's important in your life. This is what's important. This is what's absolutely number one in my life. But the truth of what you say will be seen in what you do with your time and what you do with your money. If you want to figure that out, sit down with a piece of paper sometime. Analyze your budget. Where does my money go? Because those are the things that you're living for. Where does my time go? Write it all down. How much time do I spend on what? This is where my life is going. Well, when you join a church, there's this subtle peer pressure within the church to give your time and your money with a godly perspective. Okay, God is in charge of your time and your money. In fact, you don't own any of it. We talk about tithing, giving back 10%. Actually, God owns all of it. He owns all your time. He owns all your money. So how are you going to allocate your time and allocate your money to God's kingdom? Because that's why we're here. It's the only reason why life keeps going, is because God has a purpose and he's trying to make it happen. We're busy doing a lot of things. The only reason why Jesus delays in coming is because he has people he wants reached that haven't been. So we're busy with all the things that we do, all the things that take up our time and our money. And our goal is to somehow be used in God's kingdom to make his purpose happen. Number four, Matthew 18, responsibilities. Matthew 18. Matthew 18 is an interesting chapter. You read it this past week. If you're new visiting with us, we have a Bible reading track that we're all following as a church, one chapter a day, seven chapters a week, and then on Sunday we talk about it. Well, one of the chapters, I think it was Wednesday, was Matthew 18. And Matthew 18 is an interesting chapter because it's really about forgiveness. The whole thing is about forgiveness. In the beginning, there's something about it, and at the end, someone asks, well, how many times shall I forgive my brother? What's the answer? Yeah, a lot. Again. Again and again and again. So, but right in the middle of that is this business of, okay, if you have a problem forgiving him, and you feel like you have to do something about it, this is how you do it. And it's this threefold thing. If somebody offends you, what you do is you go to them personally and you talk to them. And hopefully it can be solved with just the two of you. If you won't listen, go get someone else and talk to that person, and both of you go and talk to them. And if that person won't listen to the two of you, then you go to the church. Then you go to the church. Well, my first church, when I became a pastor and I did some of this family visiting, and I went with the elders to families and so on, what it became is, it started out, remember I said in John Calvin's day, did family visiting, and the purpose was to hold families accountable for their leading of their family in their worship to God. But it became the time that every family could complain about the church. So you go and you listen, well, you got any problems with the church? And then people would just say it. And sometimes they had a problem with some person, or they had a problem with some program of a person who's not sitting there, and they would say that. So what are they doing? They're skipping the first two steps of Matthew 18 and going right to the church. So we had to eventually kind of turn that around and go, well, you should really go talk to that person first. I think one way to sort of, I forget what the word is, one helpful way to think about bringing Matthew 18 in your life is this: talk to people, not about them. Talk to people, not about them. If you're talking about someone who's not there in a perceived or possible negative fashion, it's probably not the right thing to do. Talk to them. If you have something, talk directly to them. Now, why don't we do that? What? It's hard. Might be a problem. We're kind of angry about it. Who knows what's going to happen? And you know what? They don't listen anyway. Right? I did that once. So I talk to them and they don't listen. That's right. Often we don't listen. Someone comes to us, and remember, because we generally don't have five encouragements for one criticism, when someone comes with a criticism, we're not ready to hear. So, yeah, a lot of times we don't hear one another when we come and criticize someone. But that's what step two is about. You can now go to someone else. Talk to them and two of you. So there's a process to handle that, because this is the way human beings are. Now, that's the kind of culture that we want to be as a church. When you join in, you're saying, this is kind of what I want to do. Now, here's the problem. The problem is, when you offend me, when you do something and it really gets to me, I'm filled with all this stuff. Right? And what do I do with it? I know I should do Matthew 18, but right now I'm consumed with all these emotions. And then I have a meeting with Pastor Jim at the same, you know, right after it. And Pastor Jim is so sympathetic. He's such a nice guy that I can't help but say what I got to say. Jim, here's what someone just did, right? Because I got to go somewhere with this. And I might as well go to someone who's sympathetic towards me and likes me. It'll make me feel good. So I tell him, and of course it's all from my point of view, right? Now, that's what's going to happen. That is going to happen. Because when you have the emotions, you got to go somewhere and there's someone, and so you do it. We're going to do that. We shouldn't, but that's what we're going to do. Because we're consumed with these, it's like you hit the knee thing and it kicks out and you can't help. Okay. Where we're going to stop some of this, it's really gossip is what it is. The way we're going to stop it is for that second person. That second person should stop it because they're not emotionally all bent out of shape. They haven't been offended. So if I was talking to Pastor Jim, he's not all upset about anything. I am. And he should, when he starts hearing me talk about somebody, he should say, stop! In the name of love. You know, that whole thing. Stop. Are you telling me this because you've already talked to him personally and now you want me to go with you? Or haven't you said it to the person yet? Oh, I haven't said it to the person yet. Oh, well, okay. Well, don't give me this burden. Because you're going to say all these things and now I'm going to think all these negative things about someone and it's unfair and there'll be nothing I can do with it anyway. And I'm only hearing one side and it'll be in the back of my mind and I'll be stuck with this burden. Don't give me this burden. Go do what you should do. So that's where it's going to stop. And if we do that as a culture, for stopping people, hold it. If you talk to that person, I'll tell you, we'll stop doing it. You only have to have a couple people do that to you a couple times, and you'll stop doing it. And we'll do it according to what Jesus has called us to do. So Matthew 28. So there's some responsibilities. There's some benefits. There's some responsibilities. And then there's a process. And these are just quick little things. Number one, attendance. If you're not even going to attend, why join a church? Let us consider how we... Anyway, number two, class. There's this class that we have that people take. At least they get a bird's eye view of who we are. Four, or three, accept Jesus as Lord and Savior. Okay, joining a church is not just joining a club. Oh, I like your club. I like the benefits. I like the responsibilities. I think I'll join your club. It's not a club. It's about a relationship. It's about a relationship to Jesus as your Lord and Savior and a relationship to his body. Number four, desire to live a Jesus culture. We put that in there because it's a desire to do it, not that you're doing it. In my last church, I had a lot of AA people in there, and I was impressed. One thing I was impressed with is they had people come to an AA meeting, and the only thing they required of these people that would come is a desire. Quit drinking. Doesn't mean they're quitting, but they have a desire to. This is what they want. This is the direction they want to go. So we take people into membership who say, this is the direction I want to go. I'm a long ways. I haven't arrived. So joining a church is not the kind of thing that you do when, oh, I got my life perfect. I know everything. I got it down. It's not, this direction is the desire that I would like to go. And then number five, there's the public baptism or profession of faith. Do these things save you? No. Does that wedding ceremony make the marriage? No. But it's a good start. You know what that wedding ceremony is? It's really the couple coming up and saying, not new words to each other. They've already said their love to each other and their commitment. They've said those things before. But what are they saying? They're saying it to the everyone they know. You know what? From now on, you people, we're not two single people. From now on, we are a married couple. And we want you to treat us that way. And we want you to hold us accountable. If you see areas of our life where we're becoming two separate people, you have permission to come and say, you know what? Hey, aren't you married? I was at your wedding. I remember those words that you said to one another. I'm going to hold you accountable. That's what profession of faith is, standing in front of the church. This is what I want to do. This is the group of people locally that I want to be a part of. Okay, then we talk about, this is a strange one, exit strategy. How do you get out of the church? Or the local church, anyway. You never get out of the big church. But the local church, we do change churches. How many of you are born in this church? Some of you little kids were, right? Yeah. But most of us have come from somewhere else. How many will be buried right here in the Pathway Cemetery out back? You think? I don't know. Maybe some of you will. Maybe more than you think. But, you know, local, there's the church universal, and then there's the local expression of the church. You join the large thing, but and that membership doesn't change. But your membership in a local situation, that might change. Right? People come from other churches. People go to other churches. Well, how do you do that? I saw over the years that this was a problem. That people were leaving churches without a word. There's a lot of hurt. There's a lot of pain. It's like the dating era. Some of you remember the dating era. You know, you're dating with someone and now you don't like them. So you take 6 months to break up with them. Right? And it's painful and it's hurtful and you do all kinds of hurtful things. Instead of, you know, what's the process? What do we do? So we thought, well, let's just say that right off the bat. Number one, exit strategy, pray. That's the first thing you need to do. Where is God calling you? It's not, you know, like my friends from Finland and my friends from Ireland. Their perception of the church in the United States is everyone does that which is right in their own eyes. You don't like your church? Go to another church. You can't find any church that you don't like? Start your own. Church should meet your needs. So I think, you know, in light of all of that, we don't want to be that. That's not what church is. Church is like a family. In a family, you have some good, you have some bad, but this is your family. It's like being on a team, you know. This is our team. Our second baseman isn't that good. You know, I was on a team like that. My first softball team was like that. We had a team. It was just our little school. And, you know, we had some good guys. We had some not so good guys, but this was our team. We had a shortstop. I don't think he was that good. It was largely because he had a lousy mitt. But, you know, but that team allowed me to play that position. Okay? And that's what a family is. It doesn't have everything. But this is my team. I want to be on my team. And we live in a culture that goes, there's no sense of team. Everyone goes and does what they want to do to meet their own needs instead of struggling along with the team that God is. So you need to pray about that. Where does God calling me? What team does he want me to be on? And secondly, tell a small group leader, your small group, an elder or pastor. Tell someone about it. Yeah, you're struggling. You're not sure where God is calling you. Well, tell someone about it. Let your family pray about that. And then finally, number three, if God is calling you somewhere, leave well. Leave well. There's no reason ever to leave anything poorly. There really isn't. I know there's that tendency. I've been let go in a company too. You know, unfairly, of course. They just don't know what they're doing here. And you're angry and you have a whole list of things. And the tendency is to want to leave poorly. Leave with some words or leave with a certain attitude. But what good is that going to do? How's that going to help that team that you're leaving? Especially in the church. The church is still the church. And churches make mistakes, and maybe it is someone's fault, and it's a mistake, and what have you, and it's not your fault. So what? Are you perfect? Don't throw stones if you live in a glass house. We're all imperfect. Leave well. There's no reason to ever not leave well. Bless the people that you're leaving, and hopefully they will bless you too, because we're on a bigger team. We're on the local team. That matters a lot. But we're a part of a bigger team, the team of Jesus Christ. So these are some things about joining the church. And as I said, I still have some of the 60s mentality in me, like, well, whatever, it doesn't matter. The official membership, you know, doesn't matter. On the other hand, it does. It's your communication to that team that says, I want to be on this team. And I think, you know, I used to, when I was in seminary, think, you know, what really matters is that people know Jesus Christ as their Lord and Savior. And the church really doesn't matter. If they go to church, they don't go to church, it really doesn't matter, because what's important is that they know Jesus. Okay? But as I read the Bible, Jesus has a body. And I don't know why he chose the church to be his body, because it has a lot of weaknesses. You know, why choose this body, Lord? But he did. He chose the church as his body. And you don't have Jesus without his body. You don't have the body without Jesus. The body and the head are not separated from one another. Why he did that? I don't know. I guess it's because of his grace. He included us in him. And so his body matters, as he matters, because we get to know Jesus in a different way, I think, within the body. We get to know him personally. We get to know him in our marriage. We get to know him in our families and our friendships and things that we do. And so I think it is important to join a church. Well, let's pray together.